Moncrief on News Talk.
This may well offend a few people. What we think about male circumcision is in Ireland that we probably think of it as something that's performed for religious reasons. Fewer than one-fifth of European men are circumcised. However, once you cross the Atlantic, this figure rises to almost 50% of the male population. So why is the practice so popular in the United States? Joining me on the line to discuss this is Harry Germand, spokesman for Bloodstained Men and Friends. Harry, thanks very much for joining us.
Hi Tom, nice to be here.
You are circumcised yourself, Harry, aren't you?
Yes, I was cut without when I was unable to defend myself.
I'm not happy about it at all about the size of it.
It's my body. It shouldn't have been violated in that way. And it's a violation of my human rights and my body and my whole life.
Have you any idea why it's performed?
It's a primitive, irrational compulsion at the root of it. It goes under the guise of medical excuses, but they all fall apart when you examine them, and when you peel back the layers, you find that there's just this primitive urge to mutilate children, which has taken root in the United States. And, it's taken root in Africa too, and Middle East. It's not unique to the United States, but the United States is unique in that we do it to babies for non-religious reasons.
Do we know how it came to be so rooted in the United States?
It started in the 19th century with a masturbation hysteria. At that time, they believed that masturbation caused disease. And John Harvey Kellogg, who later made cereals, promoted causing as much pain as possible to boys and also girls by mutilating their sex organs. And somehow people fell for that. It's amazing. And then after it started, they just kept coming up with new excuses to.
Right. Firstly, the initial origin is biblical, isn't it?
Right. So Genesis 17 has circumcision in it.
Right. And that's where God is telling Abraham, isn't it? That is what he wants as a sign of their special bond.
Right. But interestingly, Genesis 15, the covenant was supposed to be kept with an animal sacrifice. So actually the older form of that keeping of the covenant with God did not involve cutting baby boys' penises.
Right. My God. And then it seems to me, as you're saying, the 19th century, that in America it became quite, and I know you mentioned masturbation, but it seems from what I'm reading here that there seemed to be a lot of medical things that were going around at the time that physicians just started thinking was related to an overly tight foreskin. And that's when they started to do it. And then on top of that, because it was more wealthy people who were doing it, other people started thinking it was almost like a mark of distinction, a sign of good breeding and sound hygiene.
Right. But they actually weren't promoting it originally as something to cure a defect. They were doing it specifically to reduce the boy's ability to pleasure himself. So it was specifically an attack against sexual pleasure.
Right.
And it's effective in that, because most of the sexual pleasure in receptors in the penis are in the foreskin. So if you cut that off, you're going to diminish that boy's capacity for feeling sexual pleasure for the rest of his life.
Okay, so, but I'm still just stunned how something can take root in society and remain so. It's since then, as I was saying, it's seen as a sign of good breeding, sound hygiene, the best medicine money can buy, and a habit of the upper classes, including the royal family.
Yeah, that's amazing to me. They should know better.
You would. So I'm just, what's stopping me in my tracks here is that you can understand a little bit, around the 19th century, but shoot forward 150 years later, How can there possibly be any? Can it still be that 50% of Americans are circumcised?
Right. So it's self-perpetuating in that every form of child abuse there's the cycle of abuse that the abused often grows up to become an abuser. And if a man who was circumcised never comes to grips with the fact that something harm was done to him and that it was unfair and wrong and that, he was violated in a fundamental way. If he doesn't have the psychological strength or has just never come to grips with it, he's very likely to say, well, I want my boy to look like me. And so it's self-perpetuating in that way.
Okay. In Europe, it's absolutely not seen that way at all. And incredibly, or increasingly across different countries, they're very clear in their advice that, there's no upside to this. And Denmark and Germany and all around the world, South Korea, we're seeing circumcision rates declining fast. What would it take? What would it take for America to try and start shifting its position as well?
We believe they are shifting, but just way too slowly. People are waking up, but this should have been over decades ago. And so the struggle is to make people aware of the problem, and that's what we do.
Right. And I have what might seem like an odd question for you, but what happens to the foreskins?
They're sold. It's a very profitable business. They're used for biomedical research, for skin care products. They're very valuable. They're used in research. It's a big business, and it's organ theft. I mean, they're stealing a body part from someone who doesn't consent to its removal, and then selling it. So yeah. That's illegal.
Right. On top of that, is it quite lucrative as well for the medical profession?
Yes, it's a billion-dollar business. It's definitely, there's the circumcisions, the hospital fees, there's lots of botches, and so there's all these repairs, the selling of the foreskins. It's a huge business.
Right. And in terms of some people who will say there are hygiene benefits to it, are there any benefits at all to this?
Basically, no. I mean, there's always research that finds some reduced infection or something, but then there's other research that says, no, we don't find that. So the short answer is, no.
Yeah, dubious at best. Dubious at best, it would seem. And are there risks involved with it?
Yeah, you can die. The kid can die. Kids lose the head of their penis often, or not often, but does sometimes get cut off. Sometimes the whole penis is lost. And you think about a boy. Your boy is starting out, and he's going to go through life without a penis. What kind of life is he going to have?
Oh my God, what a risk!
And why would you? Why would you take that risk for something that's going to harm him in any case and violate his own right to make a decision about his body? Maybe he does want to be cut, but yeah. Let him decide. But basically, once they grow up intact, they don't want to be cut.
Of course. Make the decision in their own time. Harry, thank you very much for joining us today. Harry Guermont, their spokesman for Bloodstained Men and Friends.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.